first get a philosophical explanation of the Panchatattva, first given in 10 verses and then being explained over 7 chapters. And then we get a description of the Panchatattva. Panchatattvamakam Krishnam Bhakti Rupa Sarupakam Bhakti Avataram Bhaktakyam Namama Bhakti Shaktikam. And it is said that Sei Panchatattvamili Prithiviyasiya Purva Prema Bandarira Mudra Ugadiya Panchamili Luta Prem Kori Ashvadan Yatu Yatu Piya Trishna Bhadi Anukshan. That when Krishna came to this planet, that the storehouse of love of God certainly came also with him, but it remained locked, and only those who had a key they could enter. But at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that lock was broken, and then the Panchatattva entered that storehouse of love of God, the Prema Bandar, and at that time they were plundering it. Lute, lute, lute Krishna Prem. Lute, lute Prem. They were plundering that Prem. And they drank it. Yata, yata, piya Krishna. They drank it. And as they were drinking it, Krishna, their thirst increased. Bananukam. So this spirit is truly the devotees who take time to chant themselves and to hear themselves about Krishna directly. Earlier on in discussing the success to come, I have mentioned that there is a distinction between hearing chanting, which is, and remembering, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and other devotional service, because we are directly involved with Krishna, unlike moving the material energy for Krishna. When you sit on a computer making a design for Krishna or whatever, or typing something for Krishna, it's for Krishna, but you also get square eyes after some time from the machine, right? When I drive a car for Krishna, the first hour I'm still a human being, the second hour I've become part of that machine. And if anyone, you know, although normally I'm kind of peace-loving and so on, but if I'm behind the wheel of that car and some idiot gets in front of my car, I want a flamethrower. Yeah? I want a flamethrower, a button with a flamethrower, and just burn into ashes. Yeah? That's basically what I wanted to, of course. In my mind, I control that propensity, but it is there. Somehow or other, the nature of dealing with the material energy is very perplexing. The material energy influences us very much, and therefore, even when we are serving Krishna and engaging the material energy into his service, we are, to an extent, getting influenced by that material energy until we become completely transcendental, completely internally absorbed. At that stage, we are internally always with Krishna, no matter what. And all our actions in the material world are really for Krishna, and for no other purpose. But in the conditioned state, we engage all these things in the service of Krishna. Like the big four-wheel drive with the number plate, "For You, Krishna." And made me sort of think, yeah, sure. You know? And I know myself, right? I mean, I know if you give me a Mercedes to drive, I'd like it better than, you know, some or whatever, than a Toyota or some other whatever, you know, ordinary thing. I'd rather drive the Mercedes, a little sporty one also, if possible. In the same way, you know, I mean, yeah, you can write it down. I'd rather have an Apple computer than, like, you know, a plastic piece of junk, you know. What to do? I'm not advertising here. I'm just pointing out that we can see what is quality. Ridayananda Maharaj said that a pizza is a self-realized chapati. And I see some truth in that, really, you know. I mean, you can just imagine that chapati working hard, you know, for a long time to get some cheese, you know, and after a lot of sadhana and so on, finally some cheese, some tomatoes, and eventually, you know, that glorious day comes where the chapati has become a pizza. Yeah? So I can see the logic behind it. So in the current state, yukta vairagya, or engaging the material energy in the service of Krishna, is sometimes awakening some material attachment, and other times it is awakening material repulsion. Certain things we really don't want to do, not even for Krishna, if we can help it, right? We'd rather avoid them. To just be unalloyed and to do anything for Krishna is a joyfully performed also. Anything joyfully is very difficult, very advanced. So, but when it comes to the three aspects of devotional service, hearing, chanting, and remembering, they are particularly earmarked as the Bhagavat Vidhi or the Bhagavat Mark. They are particularly earmarked as the essence of service to Bhagavan directly. There we are associating with Krishna directly. There's no question anymore of being conditioned, engaging in service to get purified. We are associating with Krishna. Unfortunately, though, we have a thick covering and we don't see it. Just as we don't see that we are in the spiritual world. I mean, the fall of the jiva discussion has been in the past a big discussion, and in the present it's not going to be a big discussion. But on one occasion Srila Prabhupada simply said, yes, the jiva never fell because we are still in the spiritual world. So we've never left. Yeah? Who thinks we've left the spiritual world is just covered. We haven't left. This is the spiritual world. This is just a corner of the spiritual world, like a corner of the sky, which is covered by clouds. A corner of the spiritual sky becomes covered and becomes the Mahatattva. Yeah? But we are in the spiritual world. So who can truly... I mean, we're not approaching the philosophical point so much in this discussion, we're just saying, who can realize, who can perceive, who can see like that, that we are actually in the spiritual world. That person is a jivanmukta. Ihayasya hriyadasi karmana manasa gira nikila swapi avastam su jivanmukta sa uchite. So, such a Jivan Mukta is obviously a very, very rare soul. It is rarely attained. Sudurlabha. Pure devotional service is rarely attained. And there is lots of these verses. Manushyanam sahasvesu kaschit yatati siddhye yatatam apisidanam kaschinam vatitattvadaha. That pure devotional service is rarely attained out of many thousands among men, Hardly one endeavors for perfection. Out of those who endeavor for perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. And many times it is mentioned that pure devotional service is rare, but not anymore, right? Not anymore. Not since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on the planet, not since Srila Prabhupada traveled all over the world. Now it's available everywhere. Now all kinds of people get swept up in it. It's not rare. Now it's spreading like anything. And one second, just see. Oh, didn't bring my phone. That's a shame. For once, it's a shame. Usually it's not a shame, but and I didn't have it here. I'll quickly have a look if it's also here, because it may be in the cloud. Who knows? If they're lucky, it's in the cloud. And then I can read it for you here. Come on. Ta-da-da-da. Ta-da-da-da. Yeah, there was an article in a newspaper, that's what I'm looking for. And it was a really good article. And if I can't find it now, I'll just do it off the top of my head. Looks like I'm going to do it off the top of my head. Okay. Top of the head it is. So, if I, the real article is much better, because it's written by a journalist. It was an article in a newspaper in Ireland. And basically, the newspaper article begins to describe how anybody and everybody and his uncle is doing yoga these days, right? And or meditation, or everybody knows about karma, reincarnation, and whatnot. You know, everybody is either into Buddhism or into something to some degree, right? And basically, at the end of the article, he's saying that whether people are practicing all of these things a little bit, or whether they are like full-fledged, you know, like Zen Buddhist monks or Hare Krishnas, you know, is it like that's just all a variety of the same thing over the whole spectrum? And in this way, we can basically see that everyone is a little bit Hare Krishna. And he says in the article, he says, actually, everyone has become a little bit Hare Krishna. He said, you know, and some are going all the way, and some are doing it a bit, but everyone's got a bit of it. Everyone is a bit Hare Krishna these days. And he says, and I wonder about one thing. Is there something these Hare Krishnas, know that we don't know? And is it that one day we will all be walking around in orange robes? Right? He's asking all these questions. It's an incredible article. I mean, you may have read it, right? I mean,
I could forward it to the students.
Yeah, it's a really good article. You should read it. It's on my blog also, KKS blog. Not advertising, but you can have a look if you want. It is there. Because it's extraordinary. I mean, it's not. He saw something. That he really saw something. I mean, he lifted a tip of the veil and he had an insight, and he's really understanding, he understood something, and even devotees may not always understand what he saw, right? But it is a fact. Everyone is becoming a little bit Hare Krishna. Slowly, slowly, and it's true. I mean, I went to a program in a small town in Belgium, you know. Now, with all due respect, Belgium is not known as like the most progressive country in the world. It's sort of conservative, you know. Everyone knows. especially in Holland, we know, you know, they're 50, they're 50 years behind. So I come in this Belgian village, you know, like as far as I could see, one of the most backward places you could possibly find on the map. And I begin, so I get old people, old people. So I think like, well, let me begin, you know, with karma and reincarnation. And after about 10 minutes, someone goes, karma and reincarnation, you know, like, I said, we know all that. Is there anything else, you know? And I go, and I realized, I was thinking, if in this village they know what karma and reincarnation is, then everywhere they know what karma and reincarnation is. Anyway, without wanting to blaspheme Belgium, I mean, you know, I mean. But it is a bit like that, that everybody knows, everybody to an extent has been influenced. And in that way, the influence of this movement has spread. You know, we used to dream of the Hare Krishna movement spreading to every town and village, and the idea was that people would just join. They would all join and shave up and start wearing dhotis and kurtas and tilak, and in our mind, we're just waiting for the whole world to join the temple and sort of like, you know, that that day will come. And in this way, we had a vision that the Hare Krishna movement would spread in a very nice, orderly way. If I metaphorically may express it, something like a very nice, trimmed garden, the kind of gardens like Gurukul Maharaj likes to make. You know, he is the original architect even of this place. Nice, formal gardens. But it didn't entirely spread like a formal garden at all. It spread, but more like the Brazilian jungle, you know? I mean, it spread in all kinds of forms and shapes, right? Mustaches, beards, and God knows what else, right? All the things that are part of the Hare Krishna movement, we never thought that they would have been part of the Hare Krishna movement, but they are. They are. And now here we are seeing that in the article it mentions that people have not accepted the way of life of the Hare Krishnas. That they have not done. But the philosophy, they have taken it. They've taken it to a large extent. So that's very interesting. And in this way we can see how actually this movement is penetrating to a much larger extent than one might just think from counting numbers. You know, if you start counting heads in our movement, sometimes we count more deities than devotees in some temples. And then, you know, you just wonder, like, how big is this movement really, right? Are we a handful of people? But then when we read a newspaper article like that, then we see the other way. We see how Krishna consciousness is penetrating and gradually, Krishna becomes known. Gradually, prasadam becomes something that is appreciated, and little by little, it all becomes mainstream. And that's very interesting. And in that way, the day will come when the golden age, which is described in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there's the discussion between Ganga and Krishna. And Krishna is explaining to Ganga, he's explaining the future. And he's saying, in the age of Kali, in the beginning, people will come and they will bathe in your waters and they will become purified. And Ganga is quiet. And then she looks at Krishna, and then she says, like, it's very nice that you said that people will bathe in my waters and will be purified, but you said in the beginning. She said, what's going to happen after that, you know? Considering, am I going to dry up or what, you know? Am I going to disappear? But then it is described, no, then the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya will come. And that Sankirtan movement will purify the entire world, and a golden age will come. And at that time there will be Ekavarna, one class of man, Haribhakta. Now, that Ekavarna Haribhakta, I would like to write a little purport to that for you, or sketch a little purport. I mean, if Krishna says Ekavarna Haribhakta, then he means to say no more Varnashram, no more Brahmins, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudras, no more material conditioning, basically. Naham Vipranatsa Narapatiya Napi Vaishya Na Sudra. I'm not a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, a Sudra. Naham Varni Natsa Griya Patir Novadnasta Yatir Va. I am also not anything in the four ashrams, Kintu Prodi Nakila Paramanam Naritapta Punam Nitabde Gopi Partapada Kamalaya Dasana Dasana Das. That I'm the servant of the servant of the gopis or of the devotees. So we're seeing Ekavarna Hari Bhakta. That's what he's saying. That we have to thoroughly understand, not miss those few words. They're very important. Ekavarna Hari Bhakta. It means the golden age will show a transcendental society, not a society, not that on every street corner there will be a Hare Krishna church. And the world will become so much Hare Krishna. No, it will mean everyone will become ecstatic, transcendental. Hari Bhakta. So therefore, Nayanam Garadasya, that verse where tears start flowing from the eyes, hairs will start standing on end, that's not just for a few, it's for everyone. Therefore this whole idea, Manushyanam Sahasresu, it's just for one out of a thousand, one out of a million, not anymore. Oh no, not anymore. Because the golden age is now appearing, Brahma Vaivarta Purana and Ekavarna Hari Bhakta. There will be only one class of men. So it is explained that as the yugas are changing, as we go into after the Dwapara Yuga, we go into the Kali Yuga, isn't it? So it's not that the change is completely abrupt, that one day there is a Dwapara Yuga and then next there is a Kali Yuga. The Vishnu Purana is describing this, and also Bhagavatam is mentioning it, but in less elaborate form, more elaborate in the Vishnu Purana. Sorry that I have to stretch my legs, but such is life. And it says in the Vishnu Purana that there is a sandhya between the yugas, a joint. Just like in Sanskrit we have sandhyas, where two words are joining and they change when they join. So a sandhya means a joint. The sandhya arti, the evening arti, is the joint of the day and the night. So sandhya is referring to a joint. So between the two yugas there is a sandhya, a joint. And we are currently in the sandhya of Kali Yuga. So it says, and in the sandhya of the golden age. Yes, the golden age has already begun, but it's still in the sandhya. But it's coming, it's developing. So it's, and then therefore this these symptoms that are described, that are now so rare, that are now so extraordinary, hair standing on end, wait till this movement gets momentum. you see. I mean, just wait. You'll be seeing it happening, right? Nothing happens by chance. And the absorption in kirtan these days, right, is definitely gaining in depth. It's not just clang, bang, boom anymore. There is actual... Some people have really some taste. They can sit for a long, long time and chant for a long, long time. Just the holy name. So, the movement is gaining momentum. Yes. And we'll see how fast. Depends on so many factors. We can't say. It's a surprise how everything will unfold. That's the adventure of the Sankirtan movement. But that is happening. See, Krishna can do it in a moment. If Krishna... I was hoping that the year 2000 would do it. You know, I was in the Jumna Maharaj and some devotees and in a tent outside a rave party in Sydney. And that's where it hits first, right? In Australia, isn't it? You know, I mean, before that, there are a few islands, the Samoa Islands and the and a bit of New Zealand, right? That gets the date change first, but then the date comes first in Australia. Yeah? So, you know, we were sitting there saying, well, you know, in New Zealand, Y2K, the millennium bug, which was supposed to upset all computers, didn't do that much. Meanwhile, devotees had dug in on many farms, right? And some farms had an enormous quantity of boga. I mean, later on, in 2001, I became in charge of the Spanish farm, and for 6 years, we're eating from the millennium bug. Yay, long live, we should have another millennium bug. That was pretty good. But anyway, we're there in Sydney, sitting there for this millennium bug, and, well, I must admit, I put a torch in my pocket, just in case the light was go off, you know, I thought, like, just in case, gotta make an escape route. But nothing happened. Yeah, what a bummer. Yeah, really, yeah. I really hoped, you know, that something would do. I mean, now possibly the Ukraine war, you know, could like really blow up and we could like get like a whole thing, and then that could be the end of this modern, this horrible, suffocating, hellish modern lifestyle that got us all in its grip, and we could be forced, you know, we could be forced to just suddenly take shelter. Then the change would come really fast. But as long as sense gratification is going on, then of course, you know, we chant a little Hare Krishna, and then what can you do? So the struggle then goes on, but... it can change very fast, very fast. So I don't know how it will change, but it is changing, and press reporters are catching on to what is going on. And the time is not far away that masses of people will be crying all together, you know, like with tears streaming from their eyes and chanting and hair standing on end. And, yeah. Yes, Gyana.
Maharaj, you were saying that even the subterranean planets are starting to change.
Yeah, I said so, like you know, the flying saucers, the UFOs, have joined the Sankirtan team, and they are the most modern Sankirtan vans that we have going around. Absolutely. I mean, because... Even they, with their spying on this planet, which obviously is going on, have picked up the holy name, and it has entered. And it's not going away. And even although, you know, it may not be completely that they're full-fledged Sankirtan fans. It may be that there are some secret agents on board. But they are carrying the message, there's no doubt about it. The holy name has gone from here to there. Don't you think so? You agree? Definitely. Yeah. Anybody doubts it?
I just hope one of them is here taking the training. Let's
see, who could it be? Who looks a little extraterrestrial? Maybe me. That's the safest way to probably do a cover up. You just act like you're with the cops. Spies are the best citizens. Anyway, we don't know how extraterrestrials penetrate, but they've picked it up for sure. The whole universe is witnessing what is going on. The demigods are very much aware of what's happening with the Sankirtan movement. They've known about it from the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not that they stopped watching. They're watching the whole thing. Your children, yeah. I don't have any. I never had children, I'm not going to have any. I promise. What?
Yeah,
well, the disciples, it's a little different. I don't know about them. I don't know about them. It's not so easy. No? It's like... not so easy to make things effective, fruitful. But everyone gets a chance. Prabhupada gave everyone a chance. And he tried to help, but in the end we have to do it. True? Great. Yeah, you know, I mean, even ghosts can it's a difficult question, you know, like, obviously when one acts sinful or, then one can take a ghost birth, when one is obsessed. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the story of Haridas Thakur, Chota Haridas, who committed suicide, and then apparently, and all the devotees could hear him singing, right? And they didn't see him, so they said, Chota Haridas has become a ghost. But Sarup Damodar Goswami, who was the authority and the scriptural authority and the most learned and the deepest authority, he said, no, that's not possible. Because Chota Haridas, he engaged in a lot of devotional service. Therefore, he could not have become a ghost. It's not possible. No. So, yeah, I'm thinking on this team because in the last few days, one disciple of mine committed suicide, somehow or other. Some unfortunate situation, and then... I had to write a letter this morning, you know, about some sort of public address, something they can read out, you know, on the funeral. So I was thinking about this question. Will a devotee become a ghost? Yeah? But a devotee has done so much service, right? And all that service, and Krishna is favorably inclined. Will Krishna save him from being a ghost? and give him the suffering, the purification in another way? I don't know, but I decided to pray for it. I asked Krishna, please save him from that. And somehow or other let him again go on in devotional service in next life. Then whatever reactions may come. Yeah, ghost stories, I mean, plus a ghost class. I don't want to start on that train. I don't worry about them. Yeah. No big deal. But I'm sure, yeah, they also are here and there and everywhere. It's not that they are not where the devotees are. So some may get purified. Get some relief from their suffering. And for the rest, I don't take questions on that topic. On the G topic. Forget it. Yeah.
Maharaj, earlier reporting a verse about, I can't remember fully, but how bhakti is in the heart of the devotee and you don't get it by just reading the shastra.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering, the shastra that we get together with the purports of Prabhupada, and it comes through the devotees. And I was also thinking that if that bhakti is just in the heart of the devotees, how do we access it?
I mean, Prabhupada's books are not coming by themselves, they come with their devotees. Right? They are like honey, you know, and where there's honey, there are bees. Right? So there are bees, a swarm of bees around this Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam, we need the discussions with the Vaishnavas, not alone in our room with the Bhagavatam, misunderstanding Prabhupada's purports. Right? There was a devotee who said that, I'm not going to the Bhagavatam classes anymore because the speakers are not pure. And therefore, I'm staying in my room and I'm just reading by myself. Yeah? But what will happen is when you just read by yourself, you just perpetuate your own misconceptions because you understand something wrong and you hear it the next time again and you understand it wrong again. And you hear it 100 times, and 100 times you think, yeah, it's like this. But if it's wrong, you just perpetuate your mistake. But when you are listening to so many different speakers or different angles, sometimes they just present the point in a different way, and you go, wow, I never thought of it like that. Or you may think, I don't agree with that. I never thought like that. But then you think, well, but then again, it broadens our own conceptions. So we need to be in the association of the devotees, to hear from the devotees. Together, right? In Sangha, we will actually penetrate into the Bhagavatam. Even into Prabhupada's purports alone, we're still not gonna be there. Anyway, having said like that, the mercy is amazing. And with the mercy, so many things can be done. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is really such an important book, right? But there is this passage where Gopakumar's spiritual master comes to meet him. And his spiritual master gives him some instructions, but then the spiritual master is too absorbed in his own things, his own ecstasies and so on. So he never gives him a full instruction. He gives him a half instruction, and Gopakumar sometimes really doesn't understand what his spiritual master really wants. But anyway, he tries his level best to, as good as he understands, to execute that instruction. And then Krishna helps and gives the intelligence. And in that way, it will be fruitful. That's also explained in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So that's like a kind of reassuring point, right? That somehow or along the line, whatever we get, it's Krishna will help and make up for what we are lacking. Yeah. And in that way, we can, it can still produce the desired success. But having said that, to hear in the association of devotees is very important. And now it's 1:17, and the time is up, and Gyanasamudra Prabhu gets the last word.
How do we remove ourselves from our emotions without being a show? Like when we're chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes with the appreciation of Srila Prabhupada and the gifts that go around us, there's tears that come from our eyes. Do we stop that emotion? Do we cultivate that emotion?
Yes, we see in the acharyas, whenever it's described that they, and in the example Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whenever in public they had some emotion, some devotional emotion or emotion related to devotional service, tears and this and that, that they would hide these tears from others, right? And would not like make a public show, and that they try to suppress the symptoms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to suppress his ecstatic symptoms. So that's what we do. But then privately is another story. But again, that's when we get mature, that such things may come. And then there's being emotional. Nectar of Devotion describes that there are two types of people. So those who have a heart like a cotton swab, like a little thread of cotton, and those who have a golden heart. It said, those who have a heart like a cotton swab, at the slightest breeze, right, it starts to move. So they are very, like, the slightest thing, they're you know, and those who have a golden heart are very grave by nature. And they don't so much display their emotions. So, but anyway, at the end, the result will be the same. All hearts, whether cotton swab heart or golden heart, all hearts will melt. And once they melt, then the emotions get too overwhelming. It said in the first stage, there are different stages of ecstatic emotions manifesting. The first stage is called dumita, the smoking stage, where it's like a fire that is not yet really burning, it's more smoke. Right? And then it's jalita, it begins to smoke, to burn. And finally it comes to the ultimate stage, and the ultimate stage is sudipta, intensely blazing. Right? And the sudipta stage of ecstasy, one can no longer control. It's that one can't suppress it anymore. It's just bursting out. It's just bursting out. So when we can still suppress, means the very early stages of like tears streaming from the eyes. In the more advanced stages, they just, like Mahaprabhu stage, shooting out of his eyes. His eyes were like a syringe, and everyone around him was getting soaked and wet. And cold tears were just shooting from his eyes, and all that, and people were getting drenched. Sudipta, intensely blazing ecstasy, beyond control, cannot be suppressed. Thank you very much. Tomorrow we'll continue one more time. That will be our final day. Thank you for being here, and. It's very nice. We should not only come to these kind of programs, but we should tell everyone that they should just come to Mayapur and spend some time in Mayapur in the winter. I know devotees who come here every year in the winter, and they're actually getting a lot in a very nice, inspiring way. So to spend time here in the Holy Dham is very valuable. Some live here, some are visiting, but this is very valuable, to spend time here in Sri Mayapur, for young and old. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada.